Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello, welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast on this dour, drizzly, horrible Monday morning. And Diego Carlos is injured, possibly for the season. A terrible start to the week, a terrible start to your Monday morning. I'm Dan Rhodes and joined this morning by Ashley Preece. Straight away, Ashley, thoughts on the injury. We were hoping it wouldn't be quite as bad as everyone feared, but Gerald coming out saying he was worried and stuff like that. And yeah, I think the club account tweeted back stronger Diego Carlos on Sunday night or Saturday as well. And you think, they did this about Ezri Konsa and he was out for a long time as well. We all thought maybe it'll be 6 weeks, 9 weeks, something like that. But it's more like 6 months, 9 months.
Yeah. It's very Villa, isn't it, really? We had it with, with Wesley, another Brazilian there, big money signing Wesley. He was just starting to show signs. Then he snapped his well, he did his knee, didn't he? And then Diego Carlos, good home debut, strong pre-season, really good signing, you're looking at it. And then, in stoppage time and being carried off the pitch. And spoke to Gerard afterwards on Saturday. He was very concerned and he had every right to be, given the news you've just heard as well. So surgery and then, at least 6 months out minimum. And then he's 29 now. He's hardly had any injuries in his career as well. Just typical. I'm thinking, look, your Luke Nilises and stuff like that. The injuries we've had previously on new signings coming in, devastated, mate. I really am, because obviously it's a big area of concern for Gerard in the summer. He highlighted that, and he bolstered the centre back ranks. And I asked him about Diego on Friday, the day before the game, and very impressive him over pre-season. Named the vice captain, had a big impact behind the scenes already, and the Villa fans seen that on Saturday at the game. Very strong debut and. That happens. They're gutted for him. I really am. And yeah, lengthy spell on the sidelines now. He'll miss the World Cup. Should he have made the Brazil squad? I mean, I brought off the season and give his age as well, 29. Achilles as well. Such a tough injury to come back from. You need that spring of pace over short distances and competing for headers and jumping back down. Doesn't bode well.
It's a big one. Me and Matt said on the podcast on Saturday after the game that we're not doctors, but this kind of injury, if it is an Achilles, is one of the worst injuries you can have as a footballer. There's a comment here from Rowan Mills, just a fan, who said, "I ruptured my Achilles last November, back to full fitness after 8-9 months. Now, Rowan, I don't want to disrespect you, but you're not a high performance athlete like Diego Carlos, and you don't have the access of places like Bodymore Heath. You'd hope with the special care that footballers get that it can be quicker than that, but I did a little bit of research before this. Like I said, we're not doctors, so we don't know for sure, and we don't want to speculate on time away. Hudson-Odoi had the same injury. Ryan Taylor had it at Newcastle going back a few years. That's 200-plus days they are out for, which is just over 6 months. I believe I read somewhere, I think it might have been The Sun, so take that with a pinch of salt, that the average recovery was 215 days out. A couple of months in a boot and crutches and stuff like that, then back to walking, with a light jogging, running, back to full fitness and match fitness. It could be, you might as well just write off the season, like you said, and if he does play a part this season, that's an absolute bonus. Santi Cazorla had it, which led to further problems. He was slightly older, I think, at the time. He had loads of infections and stuff and up to 10 surgeries, so that it ruined him, basically. More positive one, Axel Witsel had it most recently, and he came back after just 4 months, but I think that was seen as like a freak, basically, to get back that quick. You've got to write off 6 months with it, basically. So, as a footballer, if he's back playing football this season, I think that's quite an achievement. And what kind of football it leaves him in afterwards. Like you said, he's 29 now. I don't know if he turns 30 in these next 6 to 8 months to come back at that kind of age from this kind of injury. To spend 26 million on a player that might not be very good afterwards. It's just
exactly
this peak Villa, isn't it? We say it all the time, peak Villa, classic Villa. These kind of things only seem to happen to us, and it happens everywhere. But it is typical Villa. There's a comment here from Rob. He says, poor lad, moves his whole family to a new country, commits to learning a language, gets vice-captain, looking to move career, club and country up to the next level, and then ... a six-month injury. Yeah, got in, right? I don't know. I just feel horrible for him. And it's we'll talk about what it means for Villa in a sec, but it's just grim, isn't it? I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, very Villa, like I've said. And with being a centre-back as well, a lot of physical demands at centre-half. And you do fear for the future with Diego. You really do. Hopefully he has some Ezri Konsa superpowers and gets back soon. But rupturing your Achilles, snapping your Achilles tendon, no.
I mean, I'm not squeamish. I am a little bit into some things, but even the words rupture, snap, like it sounds horrible, doesn't it? It's not like a pull or a tear. It's rupturing something sounds vile.
I don't know if anyone's seen the incident up close. I missed it with what was going on later doing my reports, but I seen him being carried off by the medical staff, and I didn't see what led up to it. Whether it was an aerial challenge and he's came back down on his Achilles, I'm not too sure that. Given the craziness the last 5 minutes, I missed the incident, so I have to watch that back if I can. But like I say, if no one's around him and he just pops out like that, it's not very nice at all. And gutted, because I high hopes for Diego. Watched him over pre-season. I thought he suits the Premier League down to the ground and exactly what Villa needed, a bit of physicality. He played well on Saturday as well, so gutted.
Yeah, I can only take full responsibility for having him down as my player of the year. Cursed him in the pre-season preview. I said he'll be a fan's favourite, he'll be player of the year, and he's played two games for us. It's just grim. It's absolutely grim. There's a lot of talk in the comments about replacements and spending money and what it means for the squad going forward. Kind of touched on what it means for Carlos. It's gutting, isn't it? Potentially misses a World Cup place. Again, at his age, possibly a last World Cup, depending on what happens in the next few years after this injury. But yeah, a comment there from Craig overshadows the win. As much as Saturday, it was nice to get all that positivity out of the way and get back to it. 2 days later on Monday, it's, you know, feel gutted and dejected, and you're wondering what's going to happen against Crystal Palace and going forward for the next few months.
Yep.
We said in the summer about how Villa were a better team straight after the season ended in Carlos and Kamara and Coutinho on a permanent. How they're a stronger team for it straight away. It's now back to square one almost. Kamara does look very good, and obviously he's still in there. Coutinho, I mean, he's not started the season great. So we've got one new good signing on the pitch now. So all of a sudden we're thinking, oh, we've got this new sparring of Carlos, Kamara, Coutinho a bit further forward. It's really ripped that to shreds now. As we said, centre-back was a bit of a concern before Carlos. Well, there was talk, to be fair, that, you know, Chambers, Mings and Konsa is a decent option. So do we need a centre-half? And obviously the squad, Gerrard and co, decided they did, and Carlos is a step up on those.
Yeah.
What happens now? Do we stick with what we've got? And it's Mings and Chambers. And Mings looked, you know, kind of back to his best on Saturday. Yep. Do we stick with those three into two? Or do we go out and recruit another centre-half?
Yeah, very telling comment from Gerrard. He wasn't asked about Diego's injury. He didn't reveal it in the BT Sports stuff afterwards. It was based off a transfer question. You're going to be busy. And Gerrard went into detail. We'll see. We'll also see about Diego Carlos's injury. So given his comments there, I think they'll want a direct replacement. It was clear to see Gerrard wants to improve Villa's centre-backs and bolster that area of the pitch, like you say, improve the spine. And yeah, I think they'll go out and get a replacement. Tough to do. 17 days left of the window. Who's there who can come in and immediately improve Villa? That'll be the big question now. Johan Langer will be working overtime this week, drawing up a short list of potential replacements to come in. But yeah, 100%, I think Villa will go out and sign a centre-back should the right one come available. And yeah, I think that's still the case. I think Courtney Horse is still injured. I think he'll head out on loan, and then you're down to three there. I don't think Courtney Horse is fancied at the moment, but we'll see with that one. So I think they'll go out and get a direct replacement. They might have to pay through the nose, maybe, or potential loan. Whether they go back with Joe Gomez at Liverpool now, loan deal there, but I think Matip's injured, so I can't see Liverpool entering conversation with that one. So, yeah, busy week for Johan Langer, I think, and I fully expect Villa to sign a replacement, for sure.
In terms of numbers, I agree. Like you say, Hawes will probably end up going out if he gets back fit. Then got Mings, who's probably going to start every week now. Chambers and Konsa between those two. And then Feeney is your other choice. He's 16, 17. He can't rely on him to be starting games at the centre half if we need him to at this point. It's way too early. So in terms of bodies, yes, we need four centre-backs. I agree with that. It's the level now of what
that's it.
What the ambition is, what we can get at this stage in the season, who is available. If it's just a body and it's a third or fourth choice on loan, we're no better off at the back than we were last season, when last season at the back was a concern. So if we want to step up to where we want to be, you know, top 10, top 8, top 7, top 6, I mean, it even sounds ridiculous to say it now, we're losing our potentially best centre-half. You've got to replace him with someone who's better than the three that are already there. And if we do go out and do that and it's 30 million again, 40 million, or we're desperate for it because of the situation and how long's left in the window, and we're spending 40, 50 million on the centre half, as much as that's great and we go for it and replace Carlos and we applaud the club for doing that, does that then affect our transfer budget for the midfielder that we desperately need? Or the striker that we potentially need. Yeah. It's a difficult situation, isn't it? If it is just going to be a loan, like a Joe Gomez, if he's better than everyone who's there and that's a loan, you think, oh, that's a decent move. But if it's just a body in there as a backup to be fourth choice or potentially third choice, from a on-the-pitch perspective, we're back to Mings and Chambers or Mings and Carlos. I wish it was Mings and Carlos, Mings and Konsa, which is the problems that we had last season. So, how would you assess it? Is it this big money signing to replace Carlos, or is it just getting somebody in to add a fourth body?
Interesting.
We'll throw it out at you in a second, by the way.
Yeah, we've got to replace Diego with out and out quality and one who will come in and start games. I think Konsa and Chambers need pushing, and Mings as well. So, yeah, whole level player to come in. What you say, the emphasis on Johan Langer now, the owners, are they going to really pump money into it? But I think the centre back situation, I think that overtakes the midfielder search now, Dan. That takes precedent given Diego's injury. So it's an area that Gerrard will want to strengthen there. And yeah, we'll see what the owners can do in terms of money wise and investing. And like you say, Langer will be very busy this week. So names, I haven't heard any yet. I think that's kicked into gear now. So I'm not too sure who they'll be targeting, but. Answering your question, it's got to be real quality. A starter to come in and really improve it.
I think so. If I was playing Football Manager here, I'd be going, I need someone to start. Carlos, we're starting. We spent big money. We've got to replace it. Just getting a fourth body in, and it's, you know, somebody's backup centre back who's going to be our backup centre back. It doesn't make any sense. The midfield thing is a disappointment, and again feels a bit peak Villa, because we're always talking about we need another number eight. We need someone in there. But now centre half has to take priority. And I might be right in saying Douglas Luiz didn't even come off the bench, did he, on Saturday? So, did he? I don't know whether he did. Anyway, if he did, he didn't start, did he? So, you got someone in Douglas Luiz there as an option in midfield to come on and change things. Sanson stood around, or don't think's fancied.
No.
Whereas at centre-half, there's nothing. So, centre-half has to be the priority now. They have to go and spend some money. I'll give you two names that have come from the comments, or one has. First one, Nathan Ake. Linked with earlier in the summer. I think he was linked with Chelsea as well. Still at Man City, not gone anywhere. They paid big money for him, and I think would want big money for him still.
Yeah.
25, 30 million. And the other one, which has come from the comments, which is a decent shout, to be fair, but I don't know whether it would happen. John Stones.
Stones.
Also Man City.
Aki started the weekend, didn't he?
I did it. Okay.
Yeah.
So Stones in a World Cup year, needing to play football. Stones and Mings as a back two.
You could see that, yeah. You could see that. Stones was on the bench, and he come on, didn't he? But I don't think Man City would be willing to sell. I think Gerrard will have to come good in terms of conversations again and levels of persuasion. But Aki and Stones, yeah, interesting shapes from Man City.
I was about to say who would have been second choice if Carlos didn't go through, and it was James Tarkowski, wasn't it? Everton. So, whoever else was up for grabs in the centre half department when they were going for Carlos, they'll now have to maybe go back for them. Or yeah, it is a new name. I do think Chambers, Konsa, Mings is a decent three to go into if we're only playing two at the back.
Yeah,
you do need the depth there, but they've clearly identified that centre half was a problem, and they've signed Carlos, so they now have to replace Carlos again.
Exactly.
With a 25, 30 million, 40 million pound player. I don't know who that is. I do think Stones is a decent shout. I like him as a player. whether Stones leaves Man City on loan. I'm not so sure.
Can't see
whether we can afford to buy him, whether he want to leave Man City. Again, not sure on that. Gomez at Liverpool, like you said, Liverpool got problems at the back. So I don't see that either. He's just signed a new contract, so we're not going to have to buy him. That would only be a loan. Ake, don't mind Ake, but if he's getting minutes at Man City again, it's not going to happen either. So is it going to be somebody who's a centre-back, centre-half now, who's maybe out of favour at their club? Or are we going to be on the European market and it'll be somebody that, you know, we've maybe not even heard of?
Yeah, someone Johan Langer's worked with before. I think Victor Nelson at Galatasaray, he's continued to be linked. He's worked with Langer at Copenhagen. He's a name that's been always linked with Villa over recent windows. Yeah, it'll be European market. But I can't see Villa breaking a club record on a new centre-back. I can't see that happening over £40 million. And then you're spending best part of £70 million on two centre-backs with one of them injured at the moment. I can't see that happening. I think Villa will have to move clever. They'll have to analyse it properly and hopefully pick up a gem. And hopefully, you know, like you say, pick up a good signing and one who can and step in straight away. So, yeah, I think a big emphasis now on Consat and Chambers to really kick on and show their worth to the team. And, yeah, in terms of names, Ake and Stones, decent little shouts, and those that are on the periphery of Premier League squads at the moment, so you're not getting much minutes, that they'll be looked at. Yeah, interesting. Love to be on a fly on the wall in the recruitment room this week. We'll see what plays out. I think we could expect one sooner rather than later. I don't think Villa want to leave it too late. So over the next couple of weeks, like I say, time's running out now. So yeah, interesting next couple of weeks, Dan, to say the least.
Yeah, it's depressing, isn't it?
Thinking
about it now, because, you know, even just for the immediate short term, what happens at Crystal Palace?
Yeah.
Because if we sign somebody in the next couple of days, are they going to come straight in and start against Crystal Palace?
Can't see that.
I mean, there's no good time for your new centre-half to get an Achilles injury, but two games into the season with the transfer window running down, whatever happens now, it's not ideal, is it? It's not what they planned for, whoever we end up getting.
No.
We're at a time now where clubs are desperate to get rid of their deadwood, so we might end up with somebody who's maybe not match fit or not ready to go, and nobody who is any good is going to want to sell their players two games into a new season either. So it's either going to be a loan for somebody who's not playing much and needs minutes ahead of a World Cup year, which I think is fine if the quality's there. I just don't really. I mean, obviously we have to go with whatever the club do decide, but I'd be disappointed if it was just some 5 million defender who's going to be fourth choice. I don't think that's good enough.
I think we could see another Callum Chambers situation come out of nowhere, and no one's seen that. And do you know what I mean? When that came about, and he's done well when called upon, Callum. So someone of that ilk, I'd probably say, fits the bill at the moment. But I can't see Villa spending £40 million on a new centre-back to come in, because clubs at the moment, the last player that they'll be wanting to sell is their starting centre-back. That is 100% sure. So
yeah,
Villa will have to pay through the nose, and I think clubs will be reluctant to sell one of their two starting centre-backs. So tough market to crack that one, especially later in the window.
If you flip this around to Newcastle, and they signed Botman, didn't they, this summer? If he just got injured and they were linked with Tyrone Mings in the summer, and Tyrone Mings is starting for us now, if Newcastle came to us and was like, we want to buy Tyrone Mings because our new centre-half just got injured, we'd be saying, we don't want to sell him for 60
exactly.
million.
Yeah.
That's not to say Tyrone Mings is worth 60 million, but no club is going to want to sell someone who's starting.
No.
So it's going to be somebody who's in the periphery of a squad, not getting minutes and needs minutes. ahead of the international tournament this winter, which is 12 games away or something, 10 games away, Premier League games. So whoever does come in will have a point to prove and be raring to go. It's just fitness and stuff like that that's a concern. And if they're out of favour with the selling club, then are they good enough to be starting for us if we want to be reaching the heights of top eight? Kamara at centre-back.
Played there at Bournemouth in the second half, was it, last week?
He dropped in, didn't he, at times? He had some minutes at centre-half in his younger days, but
he wasn't brought in for that.
Isn't it? He's solved the problem at number six. He could drop back there if we were absolutely desperate. But
that's it.
I'm just thinking of the white. If you think Chambers and Mings are good enough to get us through the season with Kamara dropping back and into a back three or whatever at times to help out, and you still then spend some money on your number eight. I mean, people will say things like, our owners are loaded, spend £40 million on a centre-half and £40 million on a number eight as well. but it's FFP, isn't it? It's stuff like that. You can't just spend money because they've got it. I think it will be one or the other now. If we sign a centre-half, I don't see us signing a midfielder.
No.
Unless you sign a centre-half and loan a midfielder, like a Conor Gallagher on loan or something like that. I don't know. It's a mess, isn't it, really?
I can't see that, no.
I messaged Matt Pat earlier saying, I know he's looking into any backup options at centre-half, and I said, any names for a new centre-back yet? And he's put none so far. So that's good. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it, isn't it, for
who comes in on Saturday at Palace for you, then?
Carlos. I'd have Chambers starting now.
Chambers, first start of the season,
and,
yeah?
Chambers and Mings together, I think.
Conte didn't do nothing at Bournemouth, did he?
No, I think if you've given him a chance, you've got to give Chambers a chance if it's one or the other. So I'd say Chambers at the weekend.
Yeah.
There's a comment from Sean here, which is slightly positive. He says, look what Everton did with Cody. It can be done in terms of signing a starter elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, Cody would have been a decent shout, to be honest. Cody and Mings, we'd have to have played a back three for him. But yeah, it can be done. I suppose it can be done. I just wanted to finish with some thoughts on Bournemouth. Definitely not Bournemouth. Thoughts on
Everton.
Definitely
not Bournemouth.
Yeah, Bournemouth never happened. I started the show on Saturday by saying, it's disappointing to lose our last pre-season game against Bournemouth, but the real stuff started today with the Everton win. Let's just think it was pre-season and get it over with. Yeah, obviously me and Matt did the Everton one. So just some positive thoughts, hopefully, on the game itself. How did you see it?
Yeah, good atmosphere down there, Dan, for you?
Yeah, it's all right.
Well, it was neat in the sunshine, very hot.
Yeah, very hot. Luckily, the Trinity was in the shade. I feel sorry for people in the lower north and the lower Doug Ellis in the baking hot sun all day. Didn't like the stuff that I've seen afterwards about running out of drinks and no water and queues and stuff. I mean,
not good, is it?
Got to be better than that on a day. It's dangerous. It's dangerous. See,
I think other Premier League clubs are handing out bottles of water for free as well, which is quite good.
You can't take a drink in, can you? Because of the bottle caps and all these kind of stuff. And it's just like, it's dangerous to be out in that level of heat without fluids. And you've got people are old, you know, like my granddad was there, he's 90. Like,
90, come on.
He's got a water, refilling a water bottle. Or if you buy a bottle of Coke, go and refill it on a little pump or something. There's got to be better things, better infrastructure. We're going to see hotter weather every single year, every single summer from now on.
Exactly.
I've never seen so many people in shorts at Villa Park. I like Villa Park in the sun. It looks nice, doesn't it? Loads of different colours in the stands and stuff.
Yeah.
Just wearing T-shirts instead of black and navy coats and jumpers.
Yes.
I like Villa Park on a match day, but it being 35 degrees and no access to even buying drinks because they've run out early, you can't be better prepared than that. Not good. It's not good enough. I said let's have some positives on the game, and I've just ranted about lacking water. The game was decent. I thought the atmosphere was decent in places. There's times where it kind of ebbed and flowed, which is to be expected.
Yep.
And that last 10 minutes made it far more difficult than it ever needed to be. But yeah, decent. Good to get the win. That was all I was really bothered about. If it was a 1-0 scrappy, off someone's backside, I'd have taken that because it was just about getting that first 3 points on the board for me. But I thought the performance was pretty decent to go along with it as well.
Good cameo from Buendia from off the bench as well. He really picked it up, didn't he? When he came on. And Kamara as well, Dan. First time you've seen him live. Pretty good, yeah?
Yeah, I said on Saturday, next level. I think he'll appear in terms of our midfielders and the rest of them are down here, and we need somebody who's a bit, you know, in between the two.
Yeah.
Or obviously as good as Kamara is the ideal, but better than what we've got, and maybe not as good as him. I think he's by far our best midfielder. I don't think it's even close. I said in our pre-season thing that it'll be Villa's player signing of the year and could be a shout for Premier League signing of the year. I think he'll be that influential.
Yeah.
He just made it look easy. And I know Everton, who are going to struggle this season, isn't the best barometer of it, but he still looked classy in all the right places. And going forward, he solves that midfield issue. So certainly not going to see him drop into centre-half.
No.
But yeah, decent. What do you think of Buendia Saturday then? Would you be starting him now?
I would be starting him, yeah. Coutinho struggled a little bit again. Probably needs taking out the firing line as such. Away from home as well, I think I prefer Buendia in there. Pally's a quite physical side. I think Buendia and I will be chomping at the bit and a bit of momentum going into that one. So I'll be starting Buendia on Saturday down at Sellers Park. System, it'd be interesting if Gerrard shakes with a two-man front line again. I thought Ollie Watkins got a bit of his mojo back. I thought he was good on Saturday. Two assists, obviously. He just needs a goal now, Ollie. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Gerrard does on Saturday. I think I'm with you. Chambers comes in for Diego. I put Buendia instead of Coutinho. And wonder if he'll keep the same system. We'll see.
I think that system's fine. I think we've talked a lot about horses for courses and changing up. Something like there was I wasn't on Twitter on pre-match, but there was a bit of a breakdown, a bit of a meltdown. I know Leon Bailey, best player in pre-season,
came on
not
and
playing,
well.
This different system. I like the two up front at times. I think it's fine. Ings looked decent. Watkins, I thought his hold-up play was better at times. I mentioned it on Saturday, and the clip I've seen since is, I think it was Ming's long ball, and he brought it on his head and then on his feet and turned inside. I thought, I was like taken aback. So, that was better from Watkins. Like, he held the ball.
That's a bit more confident from him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think he looks better. Buendia, he was warming up right in front of me, and he's serious, stern face all the way through. And I was thinking, if he comes on, he's going to get sent off. Like, he looks fired up.
Come on.
Obviously, he comes on and scores the winner instead. He's got to start, hasn't he? I think.
We've
talked about, like, it being a squad game and five subs and blah, blah, blah. And, if someone comes off the bench to win the game, you've won the game, so let's not worry about it. But let's win the game at half-time instead. Let's have Buendia start and be 3-0 at half-time and not worry about it. Like, let's kill the game off.
Gerard's response, you don't pick the team, do you? It's quite good on Saturday. But the question was I don't think it was from a journalist. I think it was someone sitting in. I think he said to Stephen, he said, you got to pick Emi Buendia now, haven't you? He goes, you don't pick the team, do you? A bit tongue-in-cheek it was. But Gerard has been protecting Buendia. He had an injury off the back of the behind closed doors game against Fulham.
Yeah.
And I think he's trying to perform. He's dipped as well ahead of Bournemouth. So Coutinho got the nod then. And I think Buendia's fully fit and firing now. So Gerard has been protecting him. He didn't, like you say, being shut down with an injury there. So I think Gerard taking the right call there. So we'll see. I think he'll come in on Saturday for sure.
I hope we've had the last of our injuries this season now. Right. We've had one big one, and that's it. If we get one elsewhere, we're seriously in trouble. I just want to get your thoughts quickly on Coutinho as well.
Yeah.
And I don't want to phrase this as what do you think's happened to him, but I can't think of a better way to phrase it. He's had these moments where he looks like a serious match winner and a little bit of a diamond in there and can do something out of nothing. But it's one good game, two bad games, one good game, two bad games, and then 10 average games at best, probably in a row. He's not done anything for ages and still gets the nod. Everyone's frustrated that Buendia doesn't get in there. There's a lot of talk in our comments after after Saturday saying for Buendia, he's had Norwich and now he's like at the big club and this is his moment to shine, whereas Coutinho's had Liverpool, Barcelona, Bayern Munich and now he's at Aston Villa. And is that like a downgrade arm at Aston Villa now? Like, what's happened to me? But last year, he did look good. He had moments and spells where you think there's a decent player in there and you do kind of always think, well, how can we not start Philippe Coutinho? Look who it is. Emi Buendia sat on the bench raring to go. So it's one of those that we keep saying it's a good problem to have. And if one of them comes off the bench to win the game, you can't really argue, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, go to the last game of the last season, Man City, or what Coutinho did there. Fantastic goal, what he can do, the quality he has. I think he's struggling a little bit at the moment. I know he's only two games in. I think the Bournemouth game was a bit of a wake-up call for him. And then I think he's struggling off the back of that confidence-wise. He didn't get on the ball as much on Saturday. I was looking at him as well. I said, go on, pick up the ball. He's turning away, he's running away. When Luca Dean and your Ramsey's were looking for players to come and play with, he turned away and he was looking for the second balls from the long balls, if you know what I mean. So I think his confidence has taken a hit. There's no goals or no assists now in his last seven home games, and that's quite a worry. I know. For me as well, given Coutinho's impact at home when he first came into the team. So, more questions than answers over Philippe at the moment. I know Gerard backs him to the hilt. I don't think it's a case of, oh, I'll play for Barcelona, I've done it now, I'm coming down a peg. Not at all. So I think his confidence has taken a hit. I think he could do coming out of the 11. I think probably could make a better impact late on in a game. Tired legs, tired minds. A sharp Coutinho could come on and win a game for us. So, look, nice problems to have, but I've got my concerns over Philippe at the moment. We'll see how the next few games roll out. You've got Arsenal's and your West Ham's and Man City to come, so it'll be interesting to see if he starts against them. But away from home, Palace physical side, I think Buendia would be my option to come in. No real concerns over Philippe at the moment, but it's an area you're looking at, you need a bit more from him.
Are you a little bit concerned? Concerns maybe not the right word, but we're expected to break everything down, weren't we, on Saturday? They're happy to have possession. Same as Bournemouth to an extent. They're a side that are going to be down there. Everything. I didn't think they offered anything really, especially going forward. But when the onus is on us to break teams down, you kind of think, what are we doing here? It's Mings to Dean to Ramsey to Dean to Ramsey to McGinn to Cash to McGinn to Cash. And it's just like, exactly, do something. Like, what? It's just back and forth on the sideline and not really doing anything.
Yeah, Coutinho didn't get on the ball enough. It wasn't showing either.
And then when you do run into the box, there's times where I'm thinking, shoot. All right, shoot now then. Okay, shoot now. Like, take something, do something. It's just a little bit frustrating at times that we don't seem to have that spark out of nowhere that someone's just going to make something happen, which is what Coutinho should be. When Buendia comes on, you think he will make something happen out of nowhere here. He'll make a mazy run, or he'll barge someone off, and it'll look like, oh my God, okay, something's about to happen here. It feels a little bit like we're trying to walk it in a bit too much sometimes. Yep. Like, just take the pot shot from the edge of the box sometimes and get a corner off it and try and keep up the pressure instead of it just coming back against you. But the flip side of that is, I think if we're playing a team, and this will happen probably most weeks more so than the other way around, where we're under pressure a little bit and we have the opportunity to counter-attack, I think we'll be better on the counter, especially if it's two up front with Watkins and you can play a long ball up and chase it into the channels and you've got support from somebody running into the box late, like a McGinn or Ramsey or whoever.
Yeah.
So are you a little bit concerned that it still looks like we can't break a team down when the onus is on us to do so?
Yeah, a little bit. It's much better on Saturday against Everton. It's late in the second half, Ollie Watkins had a one-on-one tight angle to get that. But yeah, creativity-wise, yeah, there's work to do there. I think Gerrard alluded to that in his post-match as well. Didn't have too many clear-cut chances against an Everton side who were happy to be camped in. So yeah, an area of concern at the moment, but it's going long quite a lot, isn't it? Back to Cash and people like that. But yeah, I'm sure we will get there. Buendia injected some life into that number 10 area on Saturday, which was good. So more of the same, please. Yeah.
Okay, we'll look ahead to Palace later in the week after the presser and stuff and pick a predicted lineup, all those kind of things. If Villa do some business, either at centre-half or otherwise in the week, then we'll jump on and chat about that as well. But if not, we'll catch up again on Friday. Just quickly, yeah, XG was good. Our XG is like the third best in the league, I think, after Man City and I don't know who the other was, Liverpool potentially. I saw a stat, it was somebody, Man City, and we were third. People say XG is a load of nonsense, but it's a good positive underlying stat to have that we are creating some decent chances, and it's one of those that you'd say on another day. Another day against Everton, we win that 3-0, because we did have the chances to do so and could have killed the game off. But yeah, just that lacking that killer touch or that killer ball at the end sometimes isn't quite there.
Yeah, we're top six at the moment for XG across the two games. So okay. Yeah, we're above your Liverpools and people like that. So yeah, interesting way to look at. I know Dean Smith was massive on XG. He really was. So yeah, need to be a bit more ruthless, don't we? Because that final 10 minutes on Saturday should have been out of sight, really. But
I saw a comment on this earlier, and I don't want it to like be a dig at Gerrard, because I'm not meaning it like that, but the comment was that if we'd have shut the game down better on Saturday, Diego Carlos doesn't get injured. And it's like, it's this weird kind of butterfly effect thing that if we go 2-0 up and make a couple of changes or 3-0 up, we don't have that frantic end to the game, and Diego Carlos is still injury free. It's one of those weird things. I'm not going to level that at Gerrard. It's just a freak accident. These kind of things happen. It could have happened at any point. So, but I kind of agree. We have got to be better at killing off games and not having those frantic finishes, because we quite easily could have thrown that away 2-2 from a 2-0 lead, and it's a very different conversation. And so you have got to be better than that in some aspects. But yeah, I wanted to try and remain upbeat. Episode 114 of the podcast was reasons for optimism. Episode 115 has been quite the opposite, reasons for pessimism and being downhearted and stuff. But go again on Saturday, Crystal Palace, and if we get something there, I think it's a decent start to the season.
Yeah.
Ash, thanks for joining me. You and me will catch up again on Friday. Like I said, if anything breaks, a Douglas Luiz contract announcement maybe, a new signing, if anything like that happens this week, we'll do another pod. But if not, it'll be Friday. So thanks everyone for watching. We'll see you again soon.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please do let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. But until then, up the Villa.